Discussions of the high desert ecosystem in Oregon usually include at least some mention of juniper. It grows easily in the high desert, a little too easily. Juniper has a way of making issues for other plants that grow in that rain-deprived part of the world, and so plenty of people cut it down. But as long as it's there, why not find a use for it? Juniper is wood and does have some uses beyond firewood. Right now, we'll meet some people working on options for juniper. Scott Levengood is with Oregon State University. He's an associate professor, and he is also the director of the Oregon Wood Innovation Center. Scott, thank you for joining us today. Is that you, Scott? Okay, let's Duncan Livingston, you're with us, aren't you?
Yes.
Okay, rancher involved in juniper experiments. Thank you for joining us today. You live in juniper country. Would you give us an idea of some of the issues it causes out there?
Primarily, reduction in the amount of groundwater, and also native species. Juniper drinks a lot of water itself, and then it outcompetes the native species, desirable species you'd like to have on the landscape.
And so how much water does it actually take up?
Well, I guess that number is still in debated, but a considerable amount. Often you cut the trees down and they almost ooze water.
That's a lot of water. So do we have no idea how much they can take up in the course of a year, for example?
I don't know the answer to that question.
All right. So tell us about some of the work you've done in your family's ranch already with ODF and the Oregon Department of Forestry and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Soil and Water Conservation Service.
Well, the agency that is primarily sponsoring what we're doing is USDA, NRCS, Natural Resource Conservation Service, and grants to private landowners to do irrigation projects and fencing projects. In our case, juniper reduction. And in our part of the country, it's for watershed enhancement. In other parts of the state, like over in Burns, it's more of a sage hen issue. But we're trying to reestablish the native grasses in our area and native plants. And the Oregon Department of Forestry's involvement in it is they're the technical advisor to the Natural Resource Conservation Service. So the NRCS provides the funding. The Oregon Department of Forestry comes out, consults with us, you know, which areas would you like to reduce the junipers in. They lay out the fields. We contact the contractor who's going to do the work. Contractor performs the work. Then ODF comes back in and certifies that, yeah, we have, they did meet the parameters that the NRCS called for, and then we get paid for the for accomplishing the work and then pass that on to the contractor.
So we have Scott Levengood on the line now. Again, Oregon State University Associate Professor and the Director of the Oregon Wood Innovation Center, which is not a name you hear every day. Scott, what is the OWIC about?
We're mostly focused on being the outreach arm of the Department of Wood Science and Engineering here in the College of Forestry. So we help Oregon wood products firms develop new products, test existing products, explore new opportunities with previously unknown or lesser known species like Western juniper.
Was juniper always seen as something of a junk thing? You just burn it or otherwise chuck it off to the side?
Yeah, long been, because we have such phenomenal timber species in Oregon like Douglas fir and the hemlocks and ponderosa pine that have a long history of use, they see species like juniper that are so challenging to use as, you know, it's good for fence posts and firewood, but not much else. But, yeah, as you've been hearing, there's lots of interest in putting it to higher and better use.
So I noticed you you spent some time in Klamath County yourself as an extension agent. Was juniper part of the work when you were there then?
It was, yeah. So I worked with the Klamath County Extension Office from 1994 to about 2000, and it was probably about half of the duties I had there then, just because there was so much interest in it.
So let's drop back to square one, Scott, because I hear this question a fair amount. Is it a bush or is it a tree?
Oh, they're trees. In fact, they can get quite large. If you're used to seeing open grown trees where there's just one or two per acre, it looks like a small shrub. But when they grow in areas with a bit more water or mixed in with other species like the ponderosa pine, they can be 3 feet in diameter or more and probably 60, 70 feet tall. So they can get quite large.
Wow. Okay. So that gives it some more uses beyond fence posts and firewood. So what I mean, were there some uses beyond that already explored?
Yeah. Actually, people have been looking at juniper for years, and as I go back in history and look at what's been done in the 1920s and 30s in Bend, they were trying juniper wood as a substitute for cedar and pencils.
Oh wow.
Yeah, in the early 20s, in fact, and then they've looked at it since that time for other products like cardboard or fiberboard, lumber, flooring, furniture, paneling, all sorts of stuff.
So, Duncan Livingston, your family goes back, three, four generations at Gerber Ranch now? Have there been some uses like that for your family?
Well, as Scott was mentioning, we've used it for fence posts since day one. We've also used the logs for building corrals for separating cattle, and those are typically the trees that are growing in amongst the ponderosa pine, where they're much taller and with a lot less taper.
What is one of the issues with juniper? I mean, aside from the fact that it takes up a fair amount of water, it also is fairly explosive in fires. Is that right, Duncan?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Particularly when it grows in much denser situation, it carries fire pretty well.
Let's take a call here. We have and I'll invite the rest of you to call as well as we talk to Duncan Livingston and Scott Levengood about juniper and its potential uses for wood products. You can join the conversation at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Exchange.
Yes. Do the roots keep looking for water after the tree has been cut down?
Ah, that's a good question. Thanks for that. Appreciate that, Mark. And so, Duncan, why don't you take that one on?
And the question again was?
Do the roots keep searching for water even after the tree has been cut?
I don't know, but I think essentially the plant is dead, so I don't think it's going to. As long as the live foliage is gone, I don't think they're
right. There's nothing up to up above to take up the stuff. And Scott, you were about to add something?
Yeah, I would totally agree. It's the transpiration, or so the water, oxygen coming out of the foliage that'll pull the water up through the roots. So, yeah, once the tree's cut, there's nothing to draw water.
So, Scott, it seems like one trick to finding uses for juniper is to find markets for it, and I wonder how extensive an effort that is.
Yeah, there have been efforts going on for decades, and certainly pretty concerted efforts since the mid-1990s when I got involved with the Western Juniper Commercialization Project back then. And it's a naturally durable species, so raised bed gardens without requiring any kind of pressure-treated chemicals, fence posts, fence slats, even decking, siding, a lot of these things, exterior uses like that have been explored. Challenges the cost of harvesting and sawing this material. As I heard Duncan saying, with the high taper in the stems, it's really hard for the sawmills to make money out of, because they get so little decent quality lumber once they've sawn up a log. So.
Oh, so when you're talking about the taper, Duncan, it just gets too skinny at the top?
Well, often it goes from 3 feet at the base to 3 inches in the top in the span of, let's say, 15 feet.
Uh-huh.
and that's typically for a tree that's grown out all by itself out in the middle of a rock flat. So your higher quality trees are the ones that you could actually make some money on trying to mill, or going to be typically in a competitive setting where there's more water, where they can, and there's a whole bunch of trees growing together, so they're gonna all be trying to see the sunlight, so they're going to grow tall and straight, or they're going to stand a ponderosa pine.
When you have a bunch of junipers growing together in one area like that, Duncan, I mean, is there really no chance for anything else to make use of the water? Does anything else really grow around them?
That's part of the issue, is that they're drinking all the water that your grasses would typically like to have. The interesting thing is, so you get some of the older legacy trees, and you look around the base of those trees, and these are trees that have been there for 200 or 300 years, and the grasses seem to have established and don't have any problem living around the base of them. I think there must be some correlation between all these young starts growing up next to one another that really impacts the grass growth.
So they are natural to the region. I want to establish that. They would normally be there. I mean, and were there before European American settlers came. Is that right, Duncan?
Correct.
All right. So, but where have they just spread more because of the way that we have managed the high desert?
Yes. Suppression of fire.
Mm-hmm. And so, Scott Levengood, I'm just curious to know about how many other types of tree species at the Wood Innovation Center you've gone through a similar process with juniper.
We've also looked at local hardwoods, the native hardwoods like chinquapin, madrone, Oregon white oak, red alder over the years. Right now, in fact, just this morning before you called, I was doing some testing on Willamette Valley ponderosa pine. Ponderosa pine's native, of course, to the east side and to the Cascades and drier areas, but we also have a little population here in the Willamette Valley. So doing some testing on it just to see what kind of properties it has and what it might be good for.
How scientific does the testing of properties get? I mean, do you look for tensile strength and a bunch of things like that?
We do, and quite a bit of different types of tests, because one of the first things that manufacturers will ask when you tell them that you're looking at a species, they'll say, well, how much of it is there, and then what are its properties? How hard is it? How dense is it? How does it, bending properties, hardness, tensile, all the things you mentioned, how well can you machine it and glue it and things like that? So we look at all those properties.
And just in terms of strength, it looks like juniper does have some things going for it.
It really does. I mean, one of its downsides is its bending stiffness. It deforms pretty readily under a load, so it's probably not a real good choice, say, for a joist to support your deck boards, for example, even though it's durable. But we found its bearing strength, we call compression perpendicular to grain. So if you imagine a horizontal sill plate or, you know, any kind of horizontal member in a structure, and then you put a vertical piece on top of it, it's very resistant to crushing due to load, and that's what results in some of the settling you'll see in houses. In fact, we had to go back and forth on that one a few times because it was such a high strength and the resistance to crushing that we were surprised.
All right, so it can take some weight, though, was one of the major points about juniper.
That's right, yeah.
We are talking about juniper with Scott Levengood from the Oregon Wood Innovation Center at Oregon State University and Duncan Livingston, a rancher involved in juniper experiments. I see there are some calls here. I think we got the message. Several people have called to say, well, yeah, of course dead trees don't drink, so the roots wouldn't take up any water. So thank you for setting us straight on that. It was, you know, just a question we had to explore a little further. And we do have a call here from Harry in Wairika. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Scott Levengood and Duncan Livingston.
Thank you very much. I have a friend, a retired minister, who built the most beautiful staircase you ever saw out of 2-inch-thick slabs of juniper. It's the most intricately, it's strong, and it's beautiful. He's had the staircase photographed multiple times because of that. It's just, it's metal casing and just a central stem. And the juniper is self-supporting and magnificent. I've never seen anything like it, and I'd certainly recommend that to anybody.
All right, Harry.
And that's about it.
Thanks for sharing that story with us. Appreciate that. So Duncan Livingston, from your experience, though, I mean, how unlikely is it to find 2-inch-thick slabs of juniper?
Oh, it's readily available, provided that you can get the trees to the sawmill. They're, as Scott was mentioning, there's some juniper out there three foot plus in diameter, so you're going to be able to cut some 2-inch material out of it. The from a production standpoint, probably an 18 to 24 inch diameter log is probably best for making money.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, is it true you tow a bandsaw behind your truck?
I have a bandsaw mill.
Mm-hmm. And so you process the stuff right there on site?
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And how long does it take to work up a juniper log?
Well, probably 15, 20 minutes.
Oh, that's not bad. And how big a tree did it start?
Oh, it's probably 18, 20 inches in diameter and 20 feet long.
Scott Levengood, I saw at least one website advertising very high-end wood furniture that I noticed the wording was careful. It was inspired by juniper. I wonder if there is much use of juniper for furniture and if it's really any good for that.
Yeah, there's actually probably some of the longest-lasting members of the juniper industry here in Oregon are using the twisted natural form. So they will take the smaller trees that are maybe 6 to 8 inches in diameter, that maybe even dead standing material, and make headboards out of that, or rocking chairs I've seen over the years. So we call those the natural form or rustic furniture. But any other kind of furniture can be made from it as well. In fact, I believe Neil Kelly Cabinets in Portland had a juniper line. I'm not sure if they still do, but they were making kitchen cabinets out of it.
Is the wood fairly knotty?
It is. It is. So you're looking at a rustic grade, but works well and certainly in some decors, and people really love it. Like the caller was just talking about, it's one of the advantages that juniper has as well is that it does have this mixed grain color. So you've got kind of this reddish pink color intermixed with the sapwood, which is kind of a creamy white, and they can swirl around together. And most people that see it say, "Wow, that's really beautiful," and it even has aromatic properties like eastern red cedar or aromatic cedar, it's called.
So this brings up a question, though, where if one of the issues is you want to get rid of some of the cedar because you want to get it out of some of the places where it's encroaching upon high desert ecosystems, but you're trying to create markets for it, I mean, does this end up setting up a requirement where you're going to have to grow it someplace to be able to satisfy those markets?
You know, when I first started with OSU in 94, one of the first things I did was went to Missouri to visit the eastern red cedar industry, and eastern red cedar is also a juniper species, so a lot of similarities there. And somebody asked that very question. They asked the people in the Ozarks region of Missouri and Arkansas, they said, how have you ensured you've had a 100-year industry here and you don't plant any trees? How have you ensured the sustainability? And people in the room just sort of laughed, and why is that funny? And they said, just stuff, there's so much of it and it's so widespread and it's going to be a kind of a cottage industry. It'd take centuries to exhaust the supply unless we went to sawmill. Yeah.
With no planting. Okay. Scott Levengood is the director of the Oregon Wood Innovation Center and an associate professor at Oregon State University. Duncan Livingston is a rancher involved in juniper experiments and cuts plenty himself. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you.